Ready to get started here. I'm Russ Moore. I'm Director of Engineering for SharePoint Experience and Mobile. Just a little bit of history about me real quick. I've been at SharePoint since the Tahoe days, Microsoft for about 21 years. Been involved in engineering, one form or fashion on SharePoint the whole time. Eric Thompson, the Design Development Lead, is my co-presenter up here, and he's got a whole slide to talk about himself in a few minutes, so we'll let him do that. So getting started, our goals today are we're going to give you a little bit of background and context. Part of this, I want to describe this transformation that we've made, and to do that, we want to give you a little bit of history from where we've come from. And for those of you who are at one of my slides presentations yesterday may have seen the same slide, but I promise to give you a little bit more background to go with it. What we've learned by doing that, what have we learned from the years of building SharePoint on-premise, delivering to on-premise, and then moving to the cloud? And then a lot about how we're changing the way we work, what transitions we've made in the last year. A lot of you have seen a much more rapid cycle from us. We want to describe those changes. Now, the reasons we want to do this is because we want you to learn from us, be able to reuse some of those patterns if they make sense. We want you to understand some of the changes that are coming from SharePoint. You know, there's a lot of change coming. We are doing things a little differently. Things are coming out faster. We'd like you to learn a little bit about Office UI Fabric and Fabric React, which are some new, really cool technologies that we're using to build and make our stuff better. And we'd also like you to see how we've changed the SharePoint UI UX. We'd like to say improved, but we'll leave you guys as the judges of that. Last but not least, I do want to talk a little bit about ways you can send feedback to us and help us improve even more. So in the beginning, the old way, the classic SharePoint way, and I'm not saying anything about old SharePoint. Classic SharePoint is the new term, like classic Coke, since we're in Atlanta here. In the old days, we really shipped things on these really big ship cycles. So we were part of Office. Office team had this, very, very focused shipping schedule that was generally almost always 3 years. Those 3 years made up of about 1 year of design, coding, and frankly, destabilizing. A lot of the devs would go off and refactor during that first year, and we would destabilize things. And we spend the next 2 years, testing, bug fixing, making increasingly tighter quality as we did. We had service packs and QFEs on a really lengthy schedule as well. And that was the way we built things for a long time in SharePoint and the rest of Office. Along the way, what came with that was this model where we had really tightly coupled code. There are relatively few large SharePoint, DLLs, like the SharePoint DLL, massive DLL, full of lots of functionality, all tightly integrated. Everything shipped in the box. Our integration was by schedule. If we wanted to take a dependency on another team inside Microsoft, that was pretty hard. They had to be on the same schedule we were. If we wanted to take a dependency on something outside Microsoft, that was near impossible. Everything, the schedule was the king. We focused very heavily on that. We also ended up, as a result of this, having these big bang wave releases. So we had one big marketing moment. Everything came out at one time. Everybody heard about all the new features we were getting at once. We had a lot of time to focus on what the message was. And frankly, one of the downsides of that was that feedback loops were far apart and mostly one way. We didn't really have full two-way directional feedback as we went through. And another thing that was unfortunate was a lot of times we'd send stuff out for beta, a lot of feedback would come out in the beta, and by the time the feedback actually got back to the product team, we were already halfway ready to shipping at that point in time because of the way the cycles worked on that. So it was just very slow taking that feedback and adapting it. You may even have to wait years to see that feedback show up in the product. So just to kind of illustrate that, I'm going to talk a little bit about the SharePoint history, and I promise to give a slightly different version of this slide than yesterday, the same general slide, though. In the beginning, there was Tahoe. This is the first release I worked on. It was meant to be this document management plus search, and we threw in this first kind of web gadget technology that kind of became the precursor to web parts. This was our first early UI technology on top of that. To some extent, web UI was a little bit of an afterthought from where we started. It became very popular during the building of Tahoe, and so we adapted to become more web-centric and sort of built the first intranet in that thing, in that release. It was marginally successful, but what really happened after that is we decided to merge into Office at that point in time, build on top of the Office SharePoint infrastructure that was being developed there that was more SQL-based instead of Exchange-based, which was our original store for Tahoe was. And we kind of merged that technology into what was going on in other parts of Office. Built on top of ASP.NET, So same technology many of you are still using today. It's server rendered technology. We introduced web parts, we introduced CAML, a lot of other web techs that are still in use today in SharePoint. And 2006, 2007, we did probably what was at the time the most popular SharePoint release we ever did relative to the one before it. Very, very popular release. And we had a lot of new introductions in that release. We actually, in that time, acquired the Encompass team. They became part of the SharePoint team. We built the first content management features, the first web publishing features, focused heavily on portals in that time. So we started bringing a lot more functionality into the place. A lot of shared services were built, taxonomy, that kind of thing. 2010 was an incremental, I would say, something of an incremental release on 2007. We did the FAST acquisition, started getting a lot more involved with a lot of the search technologies there. We first started changing our rendering technology away from being purely server to doing just a little bit of client-side rendering, mostly XSLTs in that time frame. XL, you know, we were starting to get into it, but for the most part, we were still a server-rendered group. In 2012, we first started doing a lot more rich search-driven publishing portals, and honestly, we started investing way more in that time frame in 2013 to client-side rendering. So a lot of the experiences that we built for document libraries and lists in that time frame did use a lot of Ajaxy type technology and other types of stuff that were client-side rendered. We introduced something called the MDS, which was designed to reduce download size. So we did start thinking about that kind of thing heavily in that release. It turns out that was a very important release for another reason. That is the release which we used as the core to go build our online service SPO. So we took SharePoint 2013, that's the first release we had that had multi-tenant technology built into it in the core of the store itself. And we started building on top of that all that we needed to sort of make this work for a cloud. Now, to be fair, we didn't anticipate everything we needed for a cloud. We built a lot of new technology. So there's a fairly big gap between that and the first release of 2016. But what is truly unique about 2016 is this is the first release that we did where we went the other way around. Instead of starting from an on-premise technology base and trying to move that to the cloud, we started from an always evergreen cloud technology and brought that down to on-premise. So the reality of the way we built before had an impact on both customers and engineering. So we had these very long, expensive upgrade models. Any technology change I wanted to do, any update I wanted to do to the UI, I had to factor in both the cost to my team of building that upgrade and the cost to you, our customers, of actually having to run these very expensive upgrades. We had to make sure the customizations worked. There was just a very expensive cycle in the way we built things, especially with server-side rendering and the way we stored stuff. We picked technologies very early on in a three-year cycle. You have a three-year cycle, that sounds great. I talked about how we started to do XSLTs and XML in there. Well, a lot of people had already, you know, by the time we finished that three-year cycle, people had already moved on to other client-side technologies. We were still trapped in what we started on 3 years ago. That's this unfortunate disadvantage of starting something that takes 3 years, is you're kind of locked into whatever technology you picked at the beginning of that for the entire time. In addition to that, we ended up inventing a lot of our own tech, being Microsoft. Very hard to take dependencies on the outside. Everything was tied to that cycle. What we also found is that even though we took 3 years, many of our customers were running even far older versions of the product. And some of you still are. I know there's bound to be at least one person here who's still running 2007. Not a bad release, but it is kind of old now. So, you know, we would love to see people with our latest experiences. This is something that's really important to us, and it's part of what drives us. So then came the cloud. Cloud's different. So the most dramatic effect the cloud has, at least for my engineers, was that now we're running the service. We no longer get to build something for 3 years and throw it over the wall and watch how you guys deploy it and make it work. We now have to run the service every day. We do the upgrades. We're getting the calls. In fact, I was an incident manager just 3 weeks ago and had a couple of late night incidents. We have an on-call. Every engineer on the team takes turns being on-call engineer 24/7. All the managers and directors take turns being incident manager. So we all play into that. We all know what's going on. That what we learn from that, we have to be able to fix things very, very quickly. We have to roll out changes without breaking our customers. We have to be ready to patch things on any instant. We also, though, there's some good news, a lot of good news here. Lots and lots of telemetry. This has honestly radically changed the way that we think about changes and the product and the way we think about the product. We now know far better than, you know, in the old days we'd have these long triage processes where three people or five people or seven people would sit in a room and argue about a bug and whether that bug was impacting anybody or not. And by the time the product actually rolled out to customers and went into QFE, that would be years later, and then we'd finally find out whether the bug was actually impacting people or not. Now we actually have data and numbers. We know which features are broken. We know which areas are reliable, what's not reliable. We feed that constantly into service reviews and other things that we do. We monitor reliability, and we fix the things that are causing us problems and causing you problems at whatever the right priority based on what we're seeing in the numbers. We're very telemetry-driven in other things, too. We have real-world performance data for the first time. We actually know what's really slow, what users are really seeing. If you went to my performance talk yesterday, we talked a lot about how we've kind of changed the way we think about measuring performance away from server rendering time toward real user perception, end user perception, and that's a big difference for us in the way we can kind of try to make the product better. And last but not least, we have usage data too. We actually know which features are being used. Sometimes that surprises us, sometimes it doesn't, you know. We know on a daily basis, on a monthly basis, which features are being used, which features are not being used, how often they're used, how they're being used. All this stuff is finally available to us in a way that it wasn't before. Now, I will, one disclaimer, we are privacy scrubs, so there's no particular, we don't know about any one particular user, but we know a lot in the aggregate about people. In addition, we are evergreen. Does everybody know the term evergreen? Basically, it just means that the build is always stable. There's no such thing as what we used to do where we'd destabilize things for a while and then we'd restabilize the code base. The code has to be always stable. That means at any point in time we can take our build and we can roll it out to the cloud and everything will continue to work. And that's super, super important when you're running a cloud service. You have to be able to update at all times, always at shipping quality. And that's not all we learned. We learned a lot more. First off, we found out that, you know, our pages are looking a bit dated. We know this, and we, you know, we social media, a lot of things, there's a lot more ways for us to get feedback than we used to get. But expectations have changed. Yes, when we built that 2007 SharePoint portal server, that UI looked pretty good in 2007. It really did. It wasn't bad. But, you know, 10 years later, people have a very deep, different expectation of what good UI is and how that is. They expect it to be fast, quick, responsive. They want it to be interactive. And it's just changed. Another thing's changed is the way we think about design has changed significantly. We have a very strong partnership with design these days. We had to fight over one designer amongst a whole bunch of server teams back in those days. We have an entire team of design that we work with now. And we have to have that strong partnership. We have to find great ways to work together between the engineering team and the design team. Very different than the past. Dev patterns have also changed. You know, most web developers now are building client-side. They're building client-side JS. Many of you may have moved to client-side JS long before we did. We still have a lot of ASP.NET code. But the reality is that's the world is changing. Server rendered is still there. It still has its uses. People do it. But far more people are developing client-side today. Open source is now the standard. You know, if I want to go hire a brand new engineer out of college, for the most part, those guys are very well versed in open source technology. They can go out to YouTube or any other place and find all the information they need to find about Angular 2 or about React or whatever it is technology they're working with. They're very able to quickly pick that up and move on with it. And so open source is just a far better part of our world than it was 4 or 5 years ago. App models were out of sync with what our partners were running. We were still doing a lot of server-side stuff, a lot of app plugin, this kind of thing. And what we found is more and more of our customers and the partners that we're building on top of our product were doing client-side. So we had to make some changes. Another thing, and this, of course, impacts everybody in this room, it's a far more mobile world. The reality is our pages need to be responsive. They have to get great mobile performance. We did have mobile for SharePoint in the past, but it was usually an afterthought as opposed to something we did from the ground up. Now we are truly mobile first. We build all of our new pages responsive first. That's got to be a big part of it. And people are connecting to the cloud from all sorts of places. Mobile's not only just your phone. It's also, to some extent, that person who's using a Surface inside a hotel over bad connection or out here in the conference over bad connection or wherever. There's a lot of different factors that come into play. And you have to take that into fact in the way we build things. So some changes were needed. We had to make some changes. We needed a much more agile, data-driven process. You know, smaller incremental releases instead of the big 3-year cycle. You know, release things when they're ready as opposed to wait till you've bashed up a bunch of stuff and break people. We have to be able to adjust priorities much more quickly. You know, if one of the part of being agile is like, hey, you hear, you have all this, you know, feedback is different today. We have so many ways for people to send us stuff. In addition to having all the telemetry we can look at, we need to be able to adjust priorities much more quickly and move faster. It just turns out that's critical for us. And we need far better feedback loops built into the product itself. We look a lot at flighting. We do A/B taste testing, that kind of stuff. So we actually, when we roll out a new feature, we roll it out in waves. We roll it out to first release people first, and we do that in segments. And we have a lot of monitoring in there, and that monitoring tells us if people are having problems, if they're breaking things. It also tells us if people are engaging, if people are clicking or not clicking. So we can get an idea of whether it's actually being used or not before we roll it to the next phase, as well as whether it's working or not. We have built a much more loosely coupled system. I talked about earlier having these big giant DLLs and this tight integration that was tied to by schedule. The problem with that is if you make a change to a piece of code at a very giant DLL that's depended on by a lot of other people in a tightly integrated way, well, that turns out to break lots of things in random ways that are really hard to detect up front. So we've gone to a completely different type of model where we're faster, sort of loosely coupled manifest deployment, breaking things out, sticking to things on the end of web service boundaries and the like. And we've started to embrace microservices pretty heavily for SharePoint, which is something we did not do in the past. So we're using microservices a lot in a lot of our new core technology. We'll be bringing microservices down to on-premise at the right time when it fits the mode. And that's a big way of the way we're doing things and breaking things out that way. We've also moved toward a client-side development model. Much better for perf and scale. We find that it works better for us, works better for you in performance. And it also fits into this loosely coupled development model and deployment. I can actually deploy the client bits out separate from a lot of the server code, which gives me a lot faster turnaround on client code, which doesn't have quite the same ability to break other pieces that server code does often. So, new SharePoint mantra, and this part's kind of surprising. If you had told me 5 years ago, and I've been at Microsoft 21 years, and most of those years I've been a pretty proprietary guy using proprietary Microsoft code internally, and I've been a dev manager a lot of that time too. If you told me 5 years ago we were embracing open source code and we're going to use the open source tool chain, and we were going to use Yeoman and NPM and Gulp, I would have been very shocked. But the modern me and the modern guys, we are heavily, heavily in this space. So we use a lot of open source. All the new modern UI we're doing is heavily open source based. We use tools, we use the code, we use frameworks. A lot different from the way we were in the past. In fact, you may not realize this, or you may realize this, Microsoft is now the number one GitHub contributor. So surprise, surprise. We beat Google, we beat Facebook. We're number one at contributions to GitHub. And a lot of that's coming from my team. So modern client-side development, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Building it on our open source framework, our own SharePoint developer framework, Fabric React, which is open source, and we're going to talk about that a lot in detail. And we use another one that I left the symbol here that I won't mention as an open source framework. But we build on top of open source frameworks. We're very modern in that perspective. And also, this is super important to us. In the past, a lot of times you would find that Microsoft was building on top of CAML and a bunch of other sort of internal mechanisms. We had a lot of web services that were somewhat internal that were a little bit faster than the ones we published in classic SharePoint. We've gone to a model really where we want everybody building the same. We want to align our first party and our third party approach. We've done that with the SharePoint Developer Framework. This is truly used heavily internally. We're going to release it out to you guys as a preview today. We expect everybody to be using the same technology, because what we have found is that we can't really expect you guys to build the same great experiences we do if you're not using the same tools and you're not using the same code base. And the second side of that is the stuff we're using is going to be way more stable than the stuff that doesn't get used all the time, because that's the stuff we're monitoring, we're tracking it. So by combining this, using the same APIs, the same framework, the same code for first party and third party, a huge, huge difference. And I think it'll not only make the product look better, be faster, but also make it more reliable. Mobile and responsive, super critical. All new UI, responsive, and accessible. I didn't mention accessibility earlier. We have several sessions on accessibility. We take this very, very seriously here at Microsoft. And one of the things we're building into all this responsive UI that we're doing is the right accessibility hooks. And if you reuse that same code, you get that as well. So SharePoint framework, lots of sessions on this week. I'm not going to go too much in detail on this slide. It kind of repeats some of the things I've said before, but this is critical to us. This is a big part of what we're doing. The modern news experience, the new publishing experience, the new team site experience are all built on top of it. And we're starting to see some payoff. We've talked a lot about some of the things we're doing. We now have significantly faster development cycles. We're able to iterate faster, fix issues quickly. We've delivered a lot of technology over the last year. And also important, we get more timely feedback. We can roll this stuff out, and instead of waiting, you know, years and years and years to get the feedback, we can get to roll stuff out, get feedback right away. We've had a couple of hiccups along the way, rolled some things out. We got pushback from people. They said, we didn't like the way you did this, or we didn't like the way you did that. And we adjusted. We take the feedback, we go put it back into our schedule, and we can adjust and move forward. We also have a significantly faster uptake for new developers. Now, when I wrote this slide, I was thinking more of my own developers. But frankly, I think this is true for people who are building on top of our modern technology as well. The reality is, when you can go use open source and other types of things, there's just so much documentation and so much available out there for people. I've had new interns be able to build brand new functionality into the product within a few weeks. For years in Microsoft, where we had all this proprietary technology, it might take me a year before I would trust one of those developers to go work with core parts and build a new feature by themselves. We start them on bug fixing, things like that. Now they're able to build new features rapidly and quickly and make a difference in a hurry. Honestly, these modern client-side pages are faster. They're better performance. They're smaller in size. They get instant load from CDN. They have very fast interaction. Also a big payoff for us. And also very important to me as the director of engineering, much happier engineers. Poll numbers are up, INSAT's up, developers are happy. And I'm hoping that as we bring this stuff out to you guys that we can make your engineers and developers happier too. So we still ship on-premise, very, very important to us. And frankly, we ship from the same code base. Hybrid's a big part of that strategy. And the reason I say that is because some of the technology Microsoft is building, especially a lot of the intelligence stuff, requires a lot of machines and using machine learning and all the Azure technology and also taking a lot of Bing technology and other things into place to use that. So one of the things we'll try to do is figure out, in a smart way, what things do we bring to on-premise because it's easy enough that, you know, they're core, we should bring them to on-premise, it's just good technology, and which things do we really need to leave in the cloud and make addressable through hybrid. And a lot of where that becomes really difficult is the intelligence type stuff, because we really can leverage the cloud and all the data that we use to make things smarter. And that's where hybrid will become a big part of that play. Any learning that we get from running the cloud, our service, we bring that back to you on-premise, which is super important. I think like 2016 is a much more stable release than previous releases in a lot of ways, and part of that's because we've learned a lot from running the service ourselves and able to collect that data. When we ship on-premise, it's going to be on slower release cycles. We have announced feature packs, and we will release feature packs, and I think they're a pretty cool way for us to take a subset of functionality and release it. But frankly, you guys don't want to upgrade as often as we upgrade, which is every other week, and actually faster, once a week we actually now upgrade. I have a feeling most of you on your on-premise installations don't want to upgrade that fast. So we roll things out, slightly different cycle. And we also, when we're rolling out on-premise, we still have to test a lot. We've got a lot of different environments, a lot of different configurations. In the cloud, we have the advantage of having a more or less single topology that we control, and we know how to roll that out, and that's why we can upgrade weekly. So it's a little bit different on-premise. We have to think about things, and we still have to do the supportive upgrade, still important. And we are going to bring functionality out through feature packs, and we'll try to figure out the right smart way to do that. So I talked a little bit about feedback loops and feedback cycles. Very important to us. Not only are we trying to change the way we work behind the scenes and what we do at Microsoft there, but we also want to change, at least I do as an engineering director, how we get feedback and communication. I want my devs to be able to get two-way communication with people. So communication two-way, very important to us. Microsoft Tech Community is one way. Some people are still using Yammer, I understand. Conferences like Ignite are great. Also, if you are a developer and you're out using our GitHub stuff, we have people in GitHub. You can get comments through there. Lots and lots of ways. We're all on social media. Another thing, very, very important, we're shipping code faster, absolutely true, but we absolutely have to stay on the roadmap. We have learned shipping code faster alone isn't good enough. We also have to make sure you guys know what changes are coming. So we're working really hard to probably improve the roadmap, improve the communication so people know what's coming, that kind of thing. Office blog carries a lot of key information about updates. I encourage people to read that. There's a lot of great sources. We're going to do a better job there, and that's critical. And last but not least, listening channels during releases. One of the things, we made a mistake rolling out one of our features a while back, and one of the mistakes we made is we weren't aggressive enough about responding and listening to people while we were rolling it out. I think it's very important the first 24 hours that we ship something, we have a new feature rolling out, super important that we listen to social media, we listen to all the various sources we have, our MVPs, et cetera, and make sure we're able to adapt quickly, change rollout schedules, that sort of thing. And so that's super important, something we're trying to change and do. And so I would encourage you, if you were rolling out something in first release, send us feedback right away. Very, very helpful to us. And on that note, I'm going to pass things over to Eric, who's going to talk a little bit about what we're doing with Fabric.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Russ. All right. So cool. So yeah, so as he said at the top of the presentation, I'm Eric Thompson. I'm one of the leads for the design development team that works inside the design studio that works on SharePoint. And so design developers, little unique, little different. We do a couple things. I'm also kind of the product manager for the Office UI Fabric project. So if you heard about that, that's pretty neat too, and I'll get into all that stuff in just a second. But I want to start by saying, oh, the icons didn't load. Oh, that happens. But I love Russ. I love the engineers that work on SharePoint. But we are not the engineering group. We are different. Design developers are also not designers. They're a little bit different than that. They do a few very unique things. They toil with designs and code so that you don't have to, and so that you don't have to deal with that if you're going to extend or build on SharePoint. You don't have to do all that stuff. We've done a lot of that toiling for you. The other thing that design developers do is they also bring a different perspective to the way that we build the product, the way that we deliver the tools that you can use to extend the product. And that comes from the fact that the design developers on the team, they all kind of come from that open source, agile world. They work with all these technologies, all the things that we use, all the things that we use as a part of building the product. All these things are inherent to the way that we work. And that just means that we get to bring that modern development to this, into how we build things. And on that note, that's where Office UI Fabric comes in. So Office UI Fabric, in a nutshell, it's basically our design language for SharePoint and the rest of Office in code. We use it to help build the product. And everything that I'm about to say, you don't have to write anything down, you don't have to take pictures, you can, but it's all at uifabric.io. You can go there, you can see everything. It also has links to all of our code bases, so you can see how everything works. But we kind of break up what's inside Office UI Fabric, the toolkit that we use to build SharePoint, into two big buckets. The first one is the core styling. So the core styling make up kind of the fundamental, the elementary bits of our design language. These are things like fonts and typography, SIGO, the official icons that we use. The color, these all come from the Office and Microsoft color palette. The branded assets, these are things like the product and file type symbols. The animations, these are the official animations that we use both within our components but also within SharePoint experiences in Outlook, all the other Office experiences. And finally, a responsive grid. If you're familiar with Bootstrap, this responsive grid is very, very similar to Bootstrap's, but it's kind of tailored to fit the Office 365 silhouettes. And we use that within our products, within SharePoint, but we also make it available as a part of Fabric. The other big bucket are the components. These are kind of the building blocks of your UI. We break them down in a couple different categories. First one's inputs. You're going to see things like buttons, text fields, dropdowns, things like that. We also have pickers, like the date picker and the people picker. The layout components, things like command bars with nav bar variants, dialogues, contextual menus, callouts, all these kinds of things. Really big layout components that help you kind of contain your experience. Content and people. People are incredibly important to Office 365 and SharePoint. Lots of representations, whether you're emailing people, adding them to a group. So we provide a bunch of the assets that help you explain what people are doing, what groups are doing through things like personas. And also lists. We have lists. We know that lists are a big part of modern document libraries, OneDrive, and we have those available within Fabric, and we use those in our products. And finally, informational ones. Indeterminate progress, like spinners, progress indicators, message bars, things that help you notify people. And we use these within our products. And I keep reiterating that because it's very, very important that this is the real stuff. All these things that we use, Office UI Fabric is a toolkit that we use across the company and across Office to help make our UI. And it's also a part of SharePoint. But there are lots of other teams that are actively using, contributing, and leveraging the toolkit. The Office 365 team that makes the Suite shell, the Outlook team, of course, OneDrive and SharePoint, part of the design studio that we're in, Office Mix, Project, Visual Studio Online, Dynamics, Delve, a bunch of other folks are all using Fabric. And you can see it. Pop open the Chrome DevTools, you can start taking a look and look for the MS prefix, and you can start seeing the font colors, background colors, icons, even full components like contextual menus within OneDrive, and even as a part of Outlook. You'll be able to see font colors, background colors, all sorts of things. This is the real stuff. We use it. And of course, we make it open source. I said design developers think that way. That is actually just, we didn't occur to us to ever give it out any other way. So we took it and we made it open source. The biggest advantage to doing that is that we all get to look better together if you use this. You get to blend in, you get to look like the rest of Office because it's the stuff that we use, and that helps us all look better together. Russ mentioned that, you know, the best thing to do is to give everyone the same tools that we use so that your user experiences feel good, they feel right, and users trust it, they can get used to it, the patterns are consistent, all that's greatness. But like I said, we also couldn't think of another way to do it. This is how we do web development, this is how we see all the tools that we use, the development environments that we use. All these things are open source anyway, so this is exactly what we wanted to do with Fabric. We also love getting feedback and requests. He talked about it generally with SharePoint, and of course we want feedback for SharePoint, but we also want it for the tools that we use. You can come, you can file issues, usually myself or Peter, lots of folks on the team will actually respond to you directly. We love getting requests and contributions too. If you've got a pull request, you can go on ahead and submit that. We love it. We love hearing about documentation bugs. There's no better way for us to be fast and really, really agile than just to be working out in the open. So I said there's the core styling, those fundamental elements, Sago, the icons, the colors, but there's also the components, and we break all this out into different sets, little sub-projects that fall underneath the Fabric umbrella. So whenever you look at that, you're gonna see the core again, that baseline, and it shows up in the other component projects. When it comes to the components, we have Fabric React, which is kind of our big, robust, more up-to-date thing. We've been focusing a lot on Fabric React because we use all these components inside of SharePoint. But they're based on the React framework. We also have Fabric.js. Fabric.js is a little bit more lightweight, doesn't take a dependency on a framework like the React version does, but it's very useful, and lots of folks have taken that, like the NG Office UI Fabric project, which is meant for Angular-based apps. That was actually a fork of the Fabric.js project. And so that's great. That's open source working. That's how we wanted it to work. And then finally, there's Fabric iOS. And I'll get into that a little bit later. It's a little bit different because it's native code meant for iOS. But it is pretty neat. Still provides our design language and code for you to be able to use if you wanted to make something for iOS that integrated with SharePoint or the rest of Office. So talking about Fabric React, that's kind of our big, most robust. We're spending a lot of time focusing on this right now as we roll out new versions of SharePoint. But it's a lot of components built on top of the React framework. It's so awesome because we get to finally use a framework. If you've been following the Fabric project for a while, you've probably seen our old components didn't take a dependency on a framework. And we got a little limited by that. But using React, we can write so much more JavaScript, we can make them way more robust, do a lot more with them, and give more value back to you as a part of the project. It's also used across Office 365 and Microsoft generally, but that just means that there's other teams that are contributing to it. So they're getting stress tested, the components are getting used in product. All this just means that it's even more robust and even easier to use and more bug-free. And finally, of course, made available for you to use too. If you're looking at React, you're hearing a lot about it from the framework side, definitely take a look. It could be worth a shot. It'll definitely get you bootstrapped pretty quickly. The JS component library is our other set, our more presentation focused, pretty simple, not a lot of functionality there, but that's intentional. We wanted to make it that way so that you could go and gut it, put it on top of your own framework. You like Aurelia, go for it. Knockout, go for it. That's what this is meant for. It's built using handlebars. You're probably not gonna have to deal with handlebars. All that just means is that the code has a lot less redundancy in it. And it uses TypeScript so we get the predictability and the linting that comes with that, but it just compiles right down to vanilla JavaScript. Very, very few dependencies, too, other than our date picker, which uses a jQuery plugin. No jQuery otherwise in there. So it's pretty lightweight, not a lot that you have to depend on or that you have to use there, and hopefully not too much bloat. Why Fabric React? We get asked this. Well, the main reason for us was we just needed a framework. We started hitting a wall with our components where we wanted them to do more and more, writing a bunch of our own JavaScript to do that, and we just need a way to explain the designer's intent. design developers, the folks who helped make a lot of Fabric React's front end. We sit inside the design studio. We want to make the designers happy. We want the components to look the way that they intended, and having a framework allowed us to get that much further. It was also awesome being able to use a popular, well-documented framework. Like he was saying, a nice internet search and a Stack Overflow post can unblock us, and that's awesome. And so it's been really great being able to finally use that and leverage that to help make this set even better. Also, that usage across Office and Microsoft has been amazing, because then we can get all the engineers from across the company contributing, that many more minds helping to make the component library better. So I just told you all that, but I have to prove it. I have to show you that these components are actually better, or else I don't believe it either. So if we come up here and we look at, this is our new site. You can go and check it out, uifabric.io. We just rolled it out. There's a lot of stuff on here. You can see how to get started. You can also see the styles, things like the branded icons. We have a whole library of them up here for you, so you can come here and take a look at them, see what's available. But when it comes to the components, we have a lot available. What's listed on here are all the Fabric React components. And within them, if we have a version that's in Fabric.js, we also link off there, too, so you can go and see the documentation for that component. But what's so nice about these is that they are way more complicated in a good way, more functional, more things you can do with them. They're not data-bound either. So you can point them to whatever endpoint you're providing in your web part, in your add-in, your SharePoint app, whatever you're doing, you can use these components, and they'll work great. One of our big flagship ones is the details list. If anyone in here uses OneDrive on the web, you may notice what this is. You may notice that little check mark. This is the official OneDrive for Business and Modern Document Libraries list view. This is the real one. We built it for use in SharePoint and in OneDrive. And not only does it look right, it looks just like the OneDrive list view or the Modern Document Libraries list view, I'm also using my keyboard to move through it. Arrow keys work, pressing shift, I can multi-select, I can use command or control to select different ones, it all works great. You also get some of the nice things that come with it, like column resizing, and even marquee select. And so if you use this details list as a part of Fabric React, you're gonna end up getting all this functionality for free. And if you find a bug, you can just file an issue, and one of us will come back and we'll try to figure out how to fix it. And so all this stuff is available. Additionally, too, all the new site contains design language or design guidance as well. So we have examples, we explain how to use these things, do's and don'ts, best practices, so that hopefully if you're gonna make some unique or custom experience for SharePoint, you can get going pretty quickly and know how to use it. There we go. So, talked about Fabric.js, Fabric React, the two Microsoft projects. We also have NG Office UI Fabric. It's community driven. We link to it from our website, so you can go and check it out. Right now, it's really great for using with an Angular-based app. Angular 1.x directives added to all the Fabric components, so it's pretty useful, pretty helpful. And also, this just goes to show that the open source model works. This is exactly what we wanted to happen. There are so many frameworks out there, we can't possibly build all of them. But we provide all the right tools so that you can go out and fork one of the projects, get started on your own version. I've already heard people on the expo coming up to me saying, hey, what about Aurelia? I said, that's awesome. Maybe if we move there eventually, maybe we'll do it. But otherwise, like, you're free to go and take the Fabric.js project or the Fabric React project or just the core and start using that to make your own version as well. We totally support that. So Fabric iOS has been really interesting for us. This is our first foray into native code. It's the Office 365 design language for iOS done in native Swift. It includes some things like the type ramp, colors, icon guidelines, and recommendations. But it also has a few components with it, some basic native customizations for things like buttons, labels, text fields, but also a few brand new ones like the initials view and logos view, which are custom. Those are actually meant to represent people. I said people were important. They come as a part of this too. But like every other Fabric project, this is the real thing. The SharePoint iOS app, the front end, is built using Fabric for iOS. So if you're going to go and make something for iOS that integrates with SharePoint, I definitely recommend that you check this out because you'll be able to get the right styling using this toolkit. I get questions about other platforms. Yes. We are thinking about other platforms. Right now, we're thinking a lot more about Android. We've gone a little bit further with Android, but we're still in pretty early stages. UWP, that platform is still, we're in even earlier stages. No timelines yet, but we are thinking about it. If you do want to see these, definitely go to one of the repos, the core or the JS repo, file an issue, let us know. That's how we can start to get a sense of what people are asking for, what people need. We love that. So, talked about Fabric. Talked about design development, what we've been doing. Now let's talk about modern SharePoint, what we've done there. I've broken it up into four big buckets of things that have been happening from our perspective. You've heard some things from the engineering perspective from Russ, but I look at it as modern and open tech and what that brought us. A lot less of rolling our own, which has been a huge benefit. All these robust frameworks we can use. Lightweight and separated approach to development. This is really interesting because it actually ends up coming back to helping people who want to extend SharePoint and even end users by helping us be able to streamline our approach, streamline the tools that we use. And then reused code and patterns. Fabric React has enabled a lot here. There's a lot that we've been able to do that we weren't able to do before that helps to benefit people both from the design side but also from the code side. And then finally, my vote for the most important thing that we've done is we've really worked on the UX. We've made it responsive, we've updated it, and a lot of UX-centric development. When Russ said that, like that partnership, yeah, it's really, really strong now. And it's been awesome being able to work with folks on the design side and the engineering side to make it really sing. So modern open web technology, it's just led to more agile development. NPM, Gulp, Sass, TypeScript, these JS frameworks, they all let us do so much more, so much faster, in addition to making us more efficient and more powerful. The Yeoman generators for making web parts, the Workbench, we've used these. The design developers on the team have actually been using these to go in and polish and make new web parts. And we've been able to get going so much faster than we ever could have before. And all this stuff is available to you as well, or folks who want to extend SharePoint. There's just so much there to work with now. And it's also compatible with the old model. The front end is modern, the front end is new, but the back end's still there. And so it's just opening it up to more folks. Like he was saying, these interns that can just roll in and start making stuff, that's just the way it works now. And it's so awesome to get that additional help there. So a good case study for this is how open source made us faster. I already talked about Stack Overflow, being able to go online and just search for some documentation real quick, answers to questions. It's so great, and it's so nice not to be rolling our own, and just leveraging what folks have actually been using. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of developers are out there bug fixing, stress testing, and fixing all these things within the open source frameworks. And we get the benefit of that. And like Russ was saying, we contribute back too. We help fix some of these bugs as well. And it's so nice to have that behind SharePoint and behind Office. So this separated lightweight development is also kind of interesting because as we move to client-side development, it's allowed design developers to work on the front end. I said we toil on design. That's absolutely what we do. We help to prototype things. We try new things. But it also means that we don't get in the engineer's way. The engineers can focus on performance, getting the plumbing right, helping the service work well and stay reliable. And we can work on the front end and making that as nice as we can. And that just helps us both work together, too. You'd think that would make some siloing, but it actually helped us work even closer because the interface is much more easy to understand and much more concrete. We can now build more things, and we can have an even stronger partnership. So to explain that, I'll kind of use the property panes as a part of web parts as an example. So if you see any of the new web parts, go to the SharePoint framework demos out on the expo, any of the other talks that Russell mentioned. You can see the web parts. Web parts are pretty neat, pretty cool, lots of things you can do there. And there's this little settings pane, the property pane that comes out from the right-hand side. And within that, we have three little examples here, quick chart, world clock, and highlighted content. You can see there's some choice fields, text fields, toggles, dropdowns. Pretty basic, pretty simple. And all you have to do if you're going to want to instantiate one of these, one or two lines of code and you get these in. You don't have to like sit there and mess with the toggle, figure out how to get the toggle to work. It just appears as a part of the settings experience. And that's because it's a part of Fabric React. These are standalone components that the design devs worked on. We nailed down that little pill shape for the toggle so that you don't have to understand how that thing works or how we decided on that design. I actually think the dropdown already looks a little bit different in the last 3 weeks since I submitted this deck. And so we've been able to update these things. And the engineers just get that. And you'll get that by default if you make a new web part. If you're using some of the latest versions of Fabric React, these things just come for free. You don't have to deal with it. Reused code and patterns has also been really, really nice for us. And Fabric React's been a big enabler here. Code reuse is super important. Like I was saying earlier, if we're all working on the same thing, that just means it gets more usage, it gets more robust, and it gets better. And it just works better. And all that testing, all the goodness that comes with it, becomes a part of Fabric React as more engineers and more developers inside and outside the company use it together. But it also enables consistent patterns. This is really important for end users, because they start to see the same components across their experiences. People look the same, documents look the same, lists function and look the same. And as you know with end users, and as I know myself, I want them to be familiar. If it's unique and it's different, every page, every app that I go to, it's just harder to understand, it's harder to use. And Fabric React helps to bring that together by making it so that the patterns are consistent. And we also make this available to you so that if you want to make something custom or you want to extend something or you want to make a web part, you can use the same patterns that we use so that users are familiar with those. And a great example of that is the document card. So as a part of new SharePoint, we've decided to take documents and present them in this card format. You'll see cards as a part of SharePoint Home, some of the publishing pages, some of the web parts. And we've taken that, and we've used it elsewhere too. But it started with a prototype. So this is a little Mr. Potato Head for cards. As you can see, you're taking things, dragging them, putting them in different places. And we made this as a prototype to help designers decide on how they wanted the cards to look. Where does a person go? Where do hashtags go? Commanding? How do these things look? And you can reconfigure them and put them in different places. And this is the kind of noise that we decided on and helped figure out. And then we solidified it into a pattern that went into Fabric React. And we said, OK, that's the pattern we like. This is where we like to put things. Here's the giant monster card with everything right where we like it. Now let's hook it up to the plumbing. See how it works, see how it looks, get it so that it's nice and simple. And then let's take that, and now let's actually reuse that across our web parts. So the highlighted content web part, the activity web part, other parts of SharePoint can all start using this exact same model so that users now go to these web parts and they know where people are. They know who modified a document. They know how to take commands on that document, do things to that document, open that document. The patterns make end users more comfortable. And of course, since it's in Fabric React, you can use it too. So again, my vote for the biggest thing we've done, mobile first, focus on UX. This has been a huge thing. We focused on creating unique patterns for user experiences, like the toolbox, that card model that I just showed you. All these things enable mobile scenarios by helping things fit on the phone, reflow for the phone, and feel right. And it's all made easy and familiar so that people are used to this. We know that people are out there using these social media apps. They're using blogging technologies that are beautiful. They're modern. And SharePoint is jumping up to that, too. We've also been working on the design language so that SharePoint isn't just on par with the rest of Office. We're actually leapfrogging and moving ahead. Things are beautiful. Things are much more elegant. And we're going to keep working on that. We also do what's right for the UX so that we can provide the best browsing, authoring, and reading experiences that we can for SharePoint so that users are actually enjoying SharePoint. They're enjoying these web parts. And of course, all the tools that we use to make them, we give to you as well. So a design language is kind of a difficult thing to describe. Design languages are typically principles. They're usually a little fluffy. They're kind of out there, and then they get put into a product. They get brought down. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually kind of explain what we've done with our design language through another implementation of the design language that we used, which is Windows 10. So if you use Windows 10, you're probably familiar with some of these like settings panes and some of the apps. You can kind of see how these icons, they're thin, they're elegant. There's a lot of space. Things have room to breathe. That makes it easier to read, easier to consume. Well, we took those same principles and applied them to SharePoint. So that SharePoint, as you can see, we can kind of put the two things together. You can start to see how things are pretty easy to read. The colors come through. SharePoint office experiences are inherently dense, but we still tried to give things plenty of room to breathe so they feel easy to consume, easy to glance at, and easy to browse. Another great example of what we've been doing is work with the type ramp. So if everyone's familiar with a type ramp, basically type ramps are just click stops along font sizes so that you can create a hierarchy, a visual hierarchy within your app. So you don't want to have like every font imaginable within your type ramp. You do like 12, 16, 18, 22. And that's very deliberate so that users can glance at something and say, oh, that's a heading. Oh, that's a paragraph. That's a body text. I can read this. I know where I'm at inside my document. Well, we did that, and we did that very, very carefully across all the viewport sizes. So what you're seeing here is one of the publishing pages and some content, and you're watching as we size it down, you can see the text and the margins snap to the different sizes. And that makes it easy to read across every device. We were very, very deliberate. This took an incredibly long amount of time for us to help decide on these numbers. But it helps us so that folks can look at this on a tablet, look at it on a phone, or on a big desktop, and have a really great reading experience that feels simple and easy and modern. And finally, of course, SharePoint works across devices. All three of these things, these are all the responsive web page, not the app, just responsive web page. You can see how they're changing, they're moving so that they look right, but they still look similar. We were very thoughtful about doing responsive. One way to do responsive is just to keep reflowing things underneath each other. We actually took the time to think about, okay, what actually is right for a mobile experience? What's right for a tablet experience? And we made sure that the responsive layouts reflected what we knew people wanted to do on those devices. All of this just means we've had easier, faster, and more flexible development on the SharePoint side. We've been able to take the time to have thoughtfully tailored experiences for end users and for developers, have powerful, well-documented technology that's way easier to debug, use, and ramp up on. And finally, we use data and research to guide and improve. Being within the design studio, we have an amazing design research team that we work with who's been able to help us figure out usability studies, usage data, market analysis, all this stuff for us to help figure out not just how to modernize, but how to modernize right and how to modernize to what people actually want. And we're going to keep working on that as we continue to improve SharePoint. So the next steps, we got to be humble. We're not done. There's a lot left to do, but we're incredibly optimistic. Between Fabric React, the technology choices we're making, the partnerships between design and engineering, this all just means that we're going to be able to improve even better. We're going to be able to make things better, watch the telemetry and the analytics to see what people are doing, and find the right improvements to make. We're also going to start looking at smarter components. Visuals now. React is a visual, mainly a visual UI layer. There's really not a lot underneath there. But we're going to keep looking at how can we make these controls more powerful? How can we give people access to more? We're also going to look at things like branding, theming, other UX and UI features. We know that customization is important for SharePoint. And we're going to be taking the time over the next year to try to figure out the right way to do those things and how Fabric and Fabric React can fit into that story. And from the Fabric side, I'm going to do a pitch. Give us feedback. Give us issues. Come file them. I'll respond to you typically. We love hearing things that you want. What are the components that are missing? What are the things that you need? I've already heard some great ones while I've been here. Tree views, other types of drop-downs. That's great. Let us know. We love hearing that, and that helps us funnel it back not just to the engineering team, but also to the design team so we can figure out, hey, what are people trying to do? What are the experiences that they're trying to make? And also contribute. You see a documentation error in some of the markdown files. Submit a pull request. We love it. We look at all pull requests. Same thing with bug fixes, functionality, all that good stuff. Go for it. And of course, make the next NGOffice UI fabric. Fork one of the repos and start your own if you have something in particular that you want to do that you don't see us doing or the community doing already. We absolutely welcome that. That's how we want to work, and that's how we plan to work going forward.
All right. I'm going to quick talk about a couple of sessions we'd love you to come see, and also I'll mention some resources for you. First off, come check out these sessions. Tomorrow we have a panel, myself, head of design, Denise, who's here in the audience, several other people on stage answering your questions about anything you want to answer of SharePoint across the board. AMA panel tomorrow, BRK2295. I did the session yesterday, but check out the slides. A lot similar, some similarities, but focused on performance, how to make stuff fast in SharePoint. And another one that I would also encourage you to go take a look at is the future of SharePoint development. Already happened, but I definitely checked the slides and videos. I also want to make a pitch for stopping by the Office of UI Fabric booth,
yep,
and which is also right next to, handily, the PNP booth, which mm-hmm. also has a lot of great stuff, and come down and chat with us. And on that note, we are going to do Q&A. What I would encourage if people want to do Q&A is find a, because we are recording this, find a mic. There's one back there. Come up to the mic. Ask your question into the mic so it'll be recorded, and we will do our best to answer it for you. So thank you very much.
Got a question over there?
Question about the UI fabric.
Yeah.
If we were doing something like using your people picker control, mm-hmm. do we still have to initialize the control and assign it and pull the value from it? Or is your framework something that we will use your actual methods and things like that within our applications?
Right, so right now it's mostly focused on the front end. So like hooking it up to AAD and getting the people back from there is gonna be something that you would have to work on.
Okay.
If you do see specific issues or things that are a part of the view layer that we're providing that aren't working right though, do file an issue and let us know. We'd also kind of like to see the use case, see how deep you're trying to go and see if there's ways that we could improve the component to help it get you a little bit closer to that. But yeah, it's mostly just front end, a lot of CSS, and especially within the React side, you'll get a little bit more of that functionality for you,
yeah.
but not enough probably to go and pull people.
Yeah, I'm going to just point out, we've made these controls are 100% non-data bound.
Yeah.
So you can effectively connect them to any sort of data you want. And this has had been awesome in getting all across Microsoft people to use this. VSOs
yeah.
using them, several teams across the board are starting to use this stuff. And so we have kept the separation between sort of the back end and direct connection AD, that kind of stuff, and actual UI controls. So.
Do you use it with the SharePoint framework, or can you use it independently with your apps?
You can do both.
Yeah.
It's certainly part of the SharePoint framework, but you can use it independently as well.
Yep. Cool. Thank you.
Sounds like you kind of answered my question, but we could use this connected to an on-premise SharePoint 2013 site if we wanted to, even though the view won't look identical simply because the modern view is in online. But
sure.
In preparation for a site that might potentially move up to the cloud, we could use this UI?
Go for it.
Yeah, cool. You could.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Thank you.
That was also my question. what's the guidance for SharePoint 2013 on-premises to align your solutions and like responsive design and things like that to fit this framework in the future if that solution might be migrated? Of course, there's probably going to be some rework, especially if you convert from classic to modern pages. But you know, just a fully custom page, things like that, that you're designing responsive, use these classes. What's kind of some guidance on that you might have?
In terms of how it would integrate back with SharePoint 2013?
Traditionally, you know, use Bootstrap, things like that.
Yeah. I'd say definitely use Fabric. You can use Fabric.js or Fabric React, depending on what you're trying to do for the components. And of course, the Fabric core is applicable everywhere. That's completely framework independent. The core is, I mean, it's Sago, icons, that kind of thing. But yeah, I'd say you can probably still use it. It might look a little different at first, but again, as you come up and start working with the new framework and the new SPO stuff, you'll start to see the visuals aligning a little bit better. But I'd say you could still go on ahead and use it. If you do start to run into issues, I'm gonna say this a lot. If you do start to run into issues, though, or you start to see things that do look strange, or you're having problems with the integration, let us know. File an issue on us. Everything's uniquely namespaced, too, so if you wanted to keep using Bootstrap, you have that MS, it shouldn't conflict with it. So you should be able to use it alongside that if you'd like to, and that can help you kind of move from one to the other without just trying to do a full sale.
And I'll add to change. That, we do. While we don't have dates yet, it is our plan to bring all the modern framework down as well to on-premise in the form of either feature packs or the next major release. So,
perfect. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.
So one of the things you're saying a lot that I'm hearing is, see, we've got clients that are already lined up for migrations, getting ready for 2016 right now. Mm-hmm. And so we're getting ready to work on their branding and everything else. Now we're realistically, this is something I wish it would have been about out when they released 2016, because it would have helped us a lot with this. Is it better to, you know, it's one of those things you never want to tell a client, no, don't do it yet. Or how do we get lined up at the point where we can at least, I know you're saying there's no dates, but how do we find markers of something that says, hey, we're going to be getting close when you see something like this? That's when we're getting to the point of doing
that. Yeah, we will make sure. So first off, you can use Fabric today on-premise if you want. That's for sure.
Yep.
The framework, as we get closer, we'll figure out the right. I mean, one of the things we want to do is make sure that we actually have a solid framework. We want to make sure we get enough time on it ourselves, that it's ready, you know. And that's the first part of it. And then once we've got it ready to fully roll out in the cloud, we'll also start the ticker for when we can get that to on-premise. But on-premise, you know, has its own challenges.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But you can use the Fabric today.
Yeah.
Hey guys. Will Fabric UI have a theming engine similar to how we had Theme Roller for jQuery UI?
That is one of our next big things we want to tackle. We're actually, I'd love to hear more. I've been actually talking to a lot of people about branding and theming. We know that's super, super important for SharePoint. Fabric uses SAS, so we can use the SAS variables potentially. Like there's all the wiring is there. We just have to hook it up to the right thing. I think we're actually actively talking to engineering and design about how we're going to have to make that happen through Fabric.
Yeah.
No timelines yet, but it is something we're planning on working on. Honestly, probably whenever we get back. That's like one of our next big items.
Super important to us.
Hopefully, yes.
We'll get there.
Just we don't know exactly when, but soon.
Okay. Yeah. One last question. I saw you support for Angular 1, Angular 2 on the roadmap.
So that's a community-driven project. I think if you go to the project, they actually have it in some of their markdown files, how they're thinking about Angular 2, if it's going to be a separate project. Angular 2 is very different than Angular 1.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it might actually be a totally different repository and project. But I think from our side, we've been mainly focusing on React just because that's what we use internally. But the Fabric.js project is still up there. If someone did, whether it's a continuation of the folks who started Fabric or NGOffice UI Fabric on the 1.x,
mm-hmm.
or if it's someone else, maybe you, who starts it, like you can still use Fabric.js to get that going. But I think on our side, we haven't thought too much about Angular.
I'll add to that on the developer framework. We're actually actively working with Google now to try to get the 2.0 to work with it. 1.0 works fine with it. 2.0, you can't load two parts at a time because you can't load two copies of Angular.
Yep.
We're working with those guys right now to make that work. And actually, it's been a productive discussion, so that's in the works.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Sure.
Could you put the tomorrow sessions back on the screen?
Oh, sure. Sorry about that. There you go. I'll leave it on that.
So I recently found a PowerShell library that allows you to create like 30 some odd different types of charts and graphs based off of data you might have in memory or something like that. Is there any kind of analogous to that library for either the Fabric UI or SharePoint framework for those charting and, you know, graphs and all those types of things based on data within SharePoint that stays consistent with that Office look?
That's a good question.
That's a good.
And I'll have
like
to follow
up
on that one.
Yeah, that's a really good request.
Yeah, it's a good request.
Yeah.
I mean, we are actively working with a lot of different parts of Microsoft. But yeah. You know, Power Apps. We work with them a lot. I don't know what we've done in terms of Fabric, though. We should probably talk to them.
Yeah, we should. Yeah. I'd say, especially if you do want to see something like that, requests.
Okay. Please
the
request.
The GitHub issues would be great because then we can use that to start bubbling it up. Is like, hey, there's a bunch of requests for charting and like charting styling.
Cool. Yep.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Absolutely.
What are the browser restrictions on it?
Oh, on Fabric?
Yes.
So right now, Fabric supports the same browser matrix that SharePoint 2016 does.
Yes.
So I believe that's IE10 and up, and then all of the
Edge,
latest versions.
Chrome,
yeah.
Firefox, Safari. I mean, it's pretty broad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so anything 9 and below is going to be an issue?
Yeah, potentially.
I think so, yeah.
Oh. Thanks.
I, you know, it may work. We just don't test it.
Okay.
And still do file issues if you do see something. Sometimes some of the fixes are actually not that like difficult, in which case, you know, sometimes you have to fall back to something that totally kind of works the design language.
Right, because some of the clients that you have, they haven't modernized their browsers, and you have to deal with those issues.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Cool.
So what's your advice for a company that has its intranet on SharePoint Online and has a mandate in the works to brand the whole thing starting couple months ago, and you know, very tightly tied with marketing. You know, not having this information before, and I'm not sure if it would have necessarily stopped us, because if we can't give dates, people tend to say just move.
Yeah, just keep moving.
Yeah.
No, totally. Well, again, Fabric's built with SaaS, so if you were going to use Fabric or you happen to try to start using Fabric, you can start replacing all the color slots. So if you go to the website, you can see we have like theme primary, which is mapped to currently blues that reflect the communication blue within Office, but you could easily replace that with you know, the company's colors and then use shading to figure out the other colors.
So all that stuff, like when you were showing the example of the pill and, you know, all that stuff, we could possibly override all that?
Oh yeah, definitely. You can go in there and override that, and you can use the variables as well to help that percolate throughout the rest of the components.
Okay. Is there any documentation on that? I mean, I know there's a lot of documentation on your library.
Right.
But is there any documentation you know, good ways to customize it without making mistakes?
Our website is brand new, and unfortunately, it does not have a lot on there at the moment that describes that. But if you file an issue and ask us some questions about like, hey, I'm trying to override these, how do I rebuild? It's actually not that complicated, but we could certainly help you out. And that would actually be really good for us too, because we'd love to start putting that in the full documentation.
I'd love some best practices on that.
Yeah.
I'll also just add that all of our traditional publishing pages are still supported on SharePoint Online, and those are still brandable the way you've always been able to brand them too.
Right. Yeah. But and then I think the dilemma there is that you have this foundation and you have this Fabric being released that we won't be able to utilize until we retrofit or whatever.
Yeah,
right.
It's very urgent that we figure something out here. And I can tell you a lot of the right people are in the room listening, so.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Cool, thanks, man.
Hi, one question. We are having a Outlook plugin, legacy from 2003, actually. And we haven't really done much movement in the styling-wise. So is this something that can be used in Windows applications and plugins?
Like a native, like a Win32 application?
Oh, yeah, it could be something else. We are also looking into moving to a different kind of application as well.
So all the new add-ins and the add-ins framework, since they use basically web technologies, you can use Fabric, and Fabric's kind of the recommended way to go for those.
Yeah.
But if you're using something that's native, that may be a little bit tougher. Unfortunately, most of our stuff, as you saw, most of the projects that we have are web-based. And then we have the iOS version as well. So if you're trying to do something that's native like that, I don't know that we'd have anything that you could use at the moment.
The issue with the add-ins that I see today is that they are actually really slow.
Ah.
Yeah. So, the users want something more snappy, and it, each time it has to load the pane, it reloads.
Right. Mm.
That's the experience. So seen from a point of view in actually bringing the add-ins into the client side or the client installations,
yeah,
that is really downside, that they're not any faster than that.
This is an Outlook add-in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But also I could follow up with Outlook people, but yeah.
Yeah. I'd say to come talk to us at the expo. The Fabric booth is actually on the other side of the add-ins and the graph booth. So like we're all
right
one
next
thing.
Door.
Yeah. So definitely come and try to talk to us.
It's the same time tomorrow, or?
No, that's just the expo. Like I'll just be down at the down on the ground floor here in this building B, and you can come and talk to either of us, and you can ask us the question, or also ask the add-ins folks the same thing. This way, all of us can be together.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Cool. Thank you.
Visual Studio template for SharePoint frameworks. Is that going to happen, or do you know? Or you're looking.
We're talking to Visual Studio about it. We'll come on down to the booth and talk to us and leave your comments. But we are certainly talking to them about it. Okay. Yeah.
So it's a different development team, right? Is that right? Visual Studio is a different development team.
Yeah.
And you've got to work it out with them.
They're another team within Microsoft, and we do work with them on a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And this is something we are talking to them about, but I can't promise any dates.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, just one quick question. We're going to start up a new .NET-based application that will be hosted on the Microsoft Azure. Mm-hmm. And the purpose that we are looking at, it should be responsive design. That should be applicable both for the machine and for the mobile devices, all of them. So will NG Fabric will be useful for that.
The NG Fabric?
Because it's apart from SharePoint, not related anything to it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if you're doing something that extends Office or Microsoft generally, I think it'll probably work for you. Mm-hmm. It'd probably be good. The NG Office UI Fabric, like I said, is a little bit separate from us. Like, we don't have quite as much insight into what's happening there, although we do talk to them pretty often. Mm-hmm. But I think it would be useful for your situation, especially since it's a responsive framework. Like, you can use it to make things that should look good.
Yep.
Because it's going to be a basic .NET application, web application. And it should be possible. Is that right?
I think
Fabric.
So.
Fabric.js.
It should work.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. And if it doesn't, let us know.
Yes.
We'd love to hear it. We'd love to hear if there's something that could happen that isn't happening.
Okay. Did you also share any link where I could follow the community? I joined in a bit late, sorry.
Yeah, No. If you want to, you go to uifabric.io, or you can come find us on the expo floor, uh-huh. and then we can give you links and a sticker and stuff. But you can go there, and that'll actually link off to all the repositories so that you can file issues directly and get in contact with us.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Cool, sure.
Is the Office UI Fabric React GitHub repository the right place to put kind of those feature request things?
That is the perfect place to put those feature requests. If you put them in any of the repos, the NG Office one, again, is separate, but the Fabric.js, the Fabric Core, the Fabric React, you put them in any of them, we monitor all of them.
Okay, cool.
Perfect.
Yes.
Hi. So I'm kind of excited to see all the mobile responsive apps that are coming out, because we are actually in the process of doing from on-prem to an online migration, but we are looking at doing like a custom development for an employee engagement app to sort of push out news and like hook up with like HR functionality, PTO, that sort of thing. So on the mobile apps that are coming out, is there a way to maybe do like a push notification of news announcements, or is that not something that is in existence?
So today, did you go to the app? Well, the app session was
the same time.
Sorry about that. So the new SharePoint app actually has a news aggregation in it that shows an aggregation of all the new TeamSite news as we roll out TeamSite news. And you could use the new TeamSite news feature, it sounds like, to do what you're talking about. Push notifications are in the future. We will have that coming soon. I can't give you a date yet, but they are in the future for that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So I come from a background of sort of more advanced portal modifications, lots of heavy CSS, JavaScript, that sort of stuff. A lot of the work that we're seeing here is great and awesome. I'm wondering kind of where hooks for that type of work sit in, maybe in the priority list, and if that's even going to be recommended moving forward?
I think it would kind of depend on your use cases, what exactly it is that you're trying to do. Again, it's especially Fabric.js and Fabric Core, it's just a CSS toolkit. So hopefully you can just include some CSS files. We have CDNs that you can reference. Sure. Then you need to start making some of those references immediately. And like I said, they're uniquely namespaced, so they shouldn't conflict with anything that you've done. If you've done really complicated things, we shouldn't be hopefully borking everything. Sometimes it happens, though. So let us know if it does. It would just depend. What kinds of hooks were you looking for?
Well, I guess it's maybe more around the modern stuff. You know, we used to have pretty good custom action support, things like that, that, you know, basically gave us carte blanche to do whatever we needed to do. And it seems like, at least at the moment, that those aren't present in the modern experiences kind of moving forward. I know this isn't really related to Fabric or anything like that, but maybe just more of a general question.
So what's the specific thing you're trying to do that's not available?
A custom action. Just custom actions,
yeah.
To inject some JavaScript or any kind of hook to get into that.
Probably the number one piece of feedback I've received this week is lack of custom actions in modern pages. And it is on our roadmap in the near future. It's something we're trying to address. We've addressed it in a few places, but we are trying to address it fully. Yeah.
Okay, great, thank you.
Any more questions? All right, thank you guys.